Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Chris Whittemore. Chris is a Marine veteran who has written the book Terror to Triumph. His book is a journey through the eyes of a Marine scout sniper in Ramadi, Iraq in 2005. It continues through to Fallujah, Iraq in 2007, and finally finishes as he's flying as a crew chief and door gunner through Helmand Province, Afghanistan. So welcome to the show, Chris. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Awesome. One, thanks again for having me on. It's definitely a pleasure getting the word out and talking to other vets about all this stuff. kind of like you said, started out in the military, did a bunch of deployments as a scout sniper, as a door gunner, and then they gave me the nice boot onto recruiting duty in 2011. Sent me behind the desk, which was good and bad. You know, as we all know, you beat up your body enough throughout the years, you're going to go behind the desk and all of a sudden your body's going to start aching and hurting and things like that. So I know we've all been there, all waking up, back cracking, things like that. You know, once I retired in 2015, after a couple surgeries, putting myself back together a little bit, got the opportunity to go to the initial Invictus Games in London when Prince Harry first started it back in 2014 was the initial one. So we got a full paid trip over to London and competed against, I think, 13 other countries. I mean, it was amazing. Got out, you know, leaving the military with the TBI, the PTSD, the being broken, if you will. You know, I was told by neuropsych, hey, you know, don't, with your TBI, you're not going to be able to hold down a job. You're not going to be able to maintain a marriage, and don't worry about doing school because you're never going to be successful. Well, being a stubborn person like I am, I was like, well, we'll see about that. So been married 21 years since last December. So proved them wrong on that. Finished my master's degree with a 3.89 GPA. Almost got a 4.0, but got a B, which is horrible, but A, it is what it is. And then the big thing, the book, never thought in a million years I would ever be a published anything, let alone, you know, writing a book about, you know, the past, because I thought, you know, who's really going to be interested? There's hundreds of books out there on, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan deployments, things like that. But I wanted to bridge the gap where, yeah, it talks a little bit about the deployments, a little bit about the stuff we've all seen, you know, on deployments, the good, the bad, you know, coming back, the high outrageous suicide rate that plagued the military for so long and still plagues the military. And I wanted to kind of open up people's eyes to, yeah, this is what happens on deployment. Everyone deals with the IEDs, the casualties, that, you know, all that stuff. But no one really has written a book on what actually happens when you come back to the States, the family issues, the hypervigilance, checking the locks three times a night, you know, getting up at 3 a.m. and, you know, just freaking out, drinking excessively. And then you rinse and repeat. You know, a lot of guys get in that deployment cycle of, oh, deploy, return, drink like fish, domestic issues, family issues, redeploy. And I wanted to really shed light on, you know, everyone who goes through that. Can definitely, they're definitely, you know what, if you come back and you have issues, well, in my mind, it's like, guess what, if you don't have issues after seeing that stuff, go check yourself into the prison because you're a psychopath, you know, and they're going to make a movie about you probably, like, you know, with Ted Bundy and all them. So it's normal to have issues, you know, you're not alone. That's the big thing. A lot of people are going through it. The stigma is there, but it doesn't have to be there. It's okay to not be okay. And, you know, if I can succeed going through all this stuff and write a book for, you know, and all this other stuff. You know, anyone can do it. There's hundreds of resources. One of the pages of the book on the back is an entire page and a half of different resources and websites that people can go to and check it out and, you know, find the help that they need, you know, save the marriage, save the, you know, save your own life, really. I mean, it's so easy to, you know, I love the VA and I have a love-hate relationship, as I'm sure a lot of people do. There's a lot of medications and you can become a zombie or you can use the medication, help yourself get through what you need to do the work and come out better on the other side. And that's kind of what the book is really about, you know, showing my journey, what I went through, what I put my wife through, my family through. And, you know, it's, yeah, things are winding down. Iraq, we all know about Afghanistan and all the chaos that's involved in that political mess. But, you know, unfortunately, this isn't the first war that the U.S. has been in, probably will not be the last. So, you know, hopefully people will read the book and say, man, you know, I was going down that path. I need to stop and I need to, you know, suck it up and get help and save their military career if they want to make a career out of it. You know, if they do deploy, come back and realize, hey, you know what, I'm not sleeping. All I want to do is drink and isolate. Well, that's a normal thing, but it's not normal. You know what I mean? And it's, and yeah, so now this book is out. It's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart. I actually got a hold of a friend and they put it in a, a veteran spotlight in the back of the Army Times, Navy Times, Marine Times, basically all the Times magazines for the month of February. So it blasted out to all the bases. So, I mean, who knows how many people have looked at it. So who knows how many people, you know, picked it up and decided to read it. It's on Kindle. The audiobook will be out in the middle of the summer because a lot of people have asked, hey, I don't have time to read a book, you know, do the audio thing. And I'm like, okay, this is great, you know, and then I've been lucky enough to come on these podcasts and, you know, speak with you and a few others. And it's been amazing. It's been really amazing journey.
Yeah. And I recently wrote a book as well. Mine came out back in August, and I know exactly what you're feeling like when you said that, you know, never in a million years did you think you were going to write a book, right? And I'm actually, never. You know, hesitant to even, you know, let my English teachers know from high school that I had written a book because some of them might have a heart attack if they're like, oh my gosh, this kid like who was, you know, just getting by in English class is now a published author. Like, did we do something right? Like, what happened? Or you know, whatever. So anyways, it's, you know, it's funny because, yeah, you know, none of us go into this, you know, joining the military, getting deployed. We don't go into it thinking to ourselves, hey, this is going to be a book someday. And
yeah,
you
know,
you just don't do that. But then you realize how many lessons that you've learned along the way. And it almost feels selfish to keep some of that stuff to yourself. And so putting it out there in a book is helpful to not only yourself in terms of the therapeutic effect of writing your story down, but also, you know, helping other people by realizing that, like you said, that they're not alone, that there's other people who have gone through something very similar. You know, that it's not normal to be, you know, drinking yourself stupid every night, but it's normal in the sense that a lot of people do it. And, you know, we need to point out that there are other better ways to deal with some of the stuff that we're going through. So I absolutely, you know, understand where you're coming from. You know, I was in a very similar situation, you know, with writing my book, and I feel like, you know, we kind of need to get into this a little bit more. So, was this book something that you had in the works for a while, or was this something that you kind of woke up one day and was like, you know what, I need to put this into a story?
Great question. And the funny thing about it was, it never initially started out that it was going to be a book at all. It was, going through the therapy, going through the TBI clinic, the all this stuff, trying to remember all these stories. And I obviously, and like you, I'm sure, you never want to forget a story or leave something out or leave out, someone who played a key role in the stories. I didn't want to do that. And as I've progressed since retiring, I've actually found myself starting to struggle trying to remember oh man, what happened with this and things like that. And so I told my wife, I was like, my memory is really messing up. I said, I need to, and that's caused a lot of problems, too, with, how can you remember a night walking through Iraq on patrol at 3 a.m. with, the dogs barking, the Coke can rolling down the street, but you can't remember, when we first got married in 2001. And I was like, it's a different thing that gets ingrained in you. So I started writing it down, and it all started kind of with COVID too, because, you're working from home, you're not at the office. So you don't have the excuse of, oh, I've got to commute. I've got to, now the commute's 10 steps to the desk or something like that from, the couch or whatever. So it's like, man, how can I not implement this? So I started writing it all down, and my wife's like, you know what, you should submit it to a publication place. And I'm like, yeah, right. Why would I do that? Who's going to be interested in this? And I started talking to another good friend of mine, Scott Husing. He was the author of Echo in Ramadi. And he's been, his book has taken off. He's done a lot of great things. He does a lot of amazing different campaigns he's involved in. Save the Brave, he's the founder of that organization. He does Carry the Load. He does a lot of takes veterans out fishing, and he does a lot of amazing things. And he actually recently posted something that he was actually signing a book for Slash, the Guns N' Roses lead guitarist. So he's doing a lot of amazing things with that organization. And he takes he rides his motorcycle from California to the East Coast, and along the way does different events to raise money for veterans, because that's what he's all about. He's about giving back. He's he runs about 3 or 4 different companies, retired major, been on tons of talk shows. He does great things. But my wife kept pushing the issue, and I was like, fine, I'll submit it, whatever. So I went online, found Page Publishing, just a self-publishing company, submitted it. I was like, okay, yeah, right. Never going to happen in a million years, so that's fine. But sure enough, got an email back, and they're like, yeah, we've read your manuscript and we're really interested. We want to publish it. And I'm just like, and ever since then to even this point, I mean, I've just never thought I would ever have a book published anywhere. And the amount of people who have purchased the book, I told my wife, I was like, if I sell 10, cool, that's awesome. And pre-press release, I think there's been 300. And to date, I think there's probably another, I'm probably almost at 1,000 books sold. And it's just unbelievable. It's so overwhelming at that too, because, doing the podcast and having people call me and say, hey, I got your book and it's amazing. And, all these reviews on Amazon, I'm like, it's mind boggling to me. And it's so hard to comprehend it, because I'm like, man, why are people interested in this book? What is it about it? I'm trying to be like, this is just awesome and enjoying the ride. But I'm struggling with the why are people buying this? I'm glad they are. But it's kind of like, what is it? What is so different about this book versus the hundreds of other books that are out there? But it's just it's been an amazing journey, as I'm sure you're, being published as well. I mean, it's just like, wow.
It's actually kind of interesting, because just the other day I was in the grocery store And I was walking down the aisles and I hear my name get called out. And so I turned around, I'm looking around. I don't see anyone that I recognize, but I see this guy start walking towards me and he comes over and he shakes my hand. And he said that he got a copy of my book and he recognized me from the cover of the book. And, he was like, I just really, really appreciate it. I really enjoyed the book. I enjoyed, your openness and sharing and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, like you recognize me. Like I was wearing a ball cap. I was, like this. And I wasn't standing out. I wasn't there for like a book signing or anything like that, where they knew to come and find me there or anything like that. It was just, I was just going out for groceries for the week or whatever. Wow. And I was like, that's just so crazy. So I know what you're saying. It's like you write the book and I was the same way. I figured, probably some friends and family would buy the book, but outside of that, I don't know, probably not too many other people, but so many people have bought it, have read it, and have gotten a lot of good feedback. So so let's get into the book. Let's try to figure out why it is that people are so into this book and absolutely what it is about it. So so you gave a little bit of a description about it, but let's get a little bit deeper. So you start off in Ramadi, that's kind of your first deployment over there as a scout sniper in 2005. So tell us about that deployment, what you experienced over there and what kind of things went on over there.
Okay. That was the first deployment back into the military. Joined the scout sniper team maybe 6 months before the deployment, maybe a little less. So I wasn't school trained. So I got to do the, a lot of security with a really good friend of mine named Andy Bolden. Him and I were the security once we got into the hide site. I was point man and we got to set up all the, security pieces. During that time in Iraq was, if anyone's listening that, was over there during that time or remembers that time, Ramadi, they hadn't had the election yet. They were still, the whole city was blacklisted. So helicopters and low flying jets were not allowed to be within, I think it's, they had to keep it 1500 feet above the city to stay out of the RPG range. And it was crazy. Going to Iraq was, okay, we're going to a combat zone. It's going to be hell, but you don't really, I think, really appreciate it until you get there. One thing that I'll never forget, and it's kind of a funny story that's in the book as well, but we just got to Camp Ramadi right outside of the city, and we're all late, the big GP tents and the little metal rusted bed frames and the little 2-inch prison mattresses and all that, the transition tents. And we were sitting around and just joking around. We haven't done the relief in place yet with the other unit, the left seat, right seat. And all of a sudden these loud explosions started happening. And, everyone who's, this is their first deployment was like jumping on the ground thinking, oh my God, we're getting bombed. Like we're supposed to be in a safe place. Like what is going on? And it turns out that it was, the senior Marines were sitting back just laughing and, pointing and laughing and thinking like, what is so funny? Like we're getting bombed. Like, what is this? And they're like, no, it's just the counter battery. The artillery guns are shooting out into the city, protecting the troop, the military. And we're like, oh, trying to save face. You're like, oh, okay, man, this sucks. But then you spend a few days in that initial phase and you're like, okay, maybe this is just another deployment. This isn't a big deal. You hear the mosques and the towers going off and their little prayers 7 times a day, or you hear the counter battery, it's kind of almost lulls you to sleep in a little bit. And you're like, man, okay, this is just another deployment. This will be okay. And then one day, we're walking to the chow hall, which is maybe a mile away from the tents. And a group of guys stopped at the concrete barriers to smoke. We kept going into to the chow hall, like one group stayed, one group went. And, I was like, oh, I'll just go back there and I'll stay with these guys and smoke. And I was like, I'll just smoke on the way back. Well, as soon as we go through the front door, we hear this loud explosion and we're like, whoa, what was that? Counter battery, whatever. So we eat, and as we're walking back, the scene is still chaotic. And what had happened, and there's a young guy named Swanberg, and they actually named the chow hall after him. They put a little plaque above the door, and the group that stopped to smoke, a rocket landed right up against them, basically, and just and killed all of them. But that was like, I think less than a week in country. And that was kind of the jump start of like, oh, like, okay, now I know where we, like, it's kind of like that snap back into reality, you know, doesn't matter where you are for the next 7 months. I mean, it could happen just like that. So we, you know, different events happened during the deployment, you know, one being, you know, all we had a helicopter shot down, a bunch of EOD guys got taken out. We ended up losing, I think, 15 or 20 guys during that deployment. And weirdly, and I think a lot of people relate to this maybe too, is you don't ever want to have it happen, but you kind of know there's going to be stuff that's going to happen along the way. And U.S., you know, service members are going to get hurt, killed, you know, things like that. It's one of those things. It's going to happen. You just hope it doesn't happen, but you know, deep down, you're like, okay, we're in a combat zone. Things are going to go bad. But the worst part about it is when the young innocents or the young kids over there get hurt. And that was one of the stories I share in the book too, is we had this this family, super great. We used their house once as a 3-day mission. We were down there, and it was a father, two wives, and like 3 or 4 kids or something like that. One being, which was like maybe 7-8 years old, little girl. And we left, you know, we were there 3 days, not a whole lot happened, but we left and we'll be like, hey, you know, probably won't be back, but maybe we'll be back through again to use your house in a couple of weeks. Well, sure enough, a few weeks later, they're like, hey, we need you guys back down there. We're like, perfect. We know right where we're going. We get in there and the guy's limping as he's walking to the other room. We put them all in one room, provide security, you know, keep them all in one location. And we're asking, we're like, where's the rest of your family? Like, what's going on? Well, it turns out that days after we left, the Taliban found out that he let us use his house, which he didn't have a choice. You know, we were going to use his house if we had to. And they had come in, beat the guy, killed one of his wives, and then executed his 8-year-old daughter out in the street as an example. And I mean, ever since that was kind of the jumpstart into the, all right, just isolating the anger, you know, just burying the trauma, because you can't really let it get to you. You have to be able to do your job. And, you know, then we, as you get closer to the end of the deployment, you know, you get guys who get hurt, one guy, his name was Conley. His wife was giving birth to their child. And then there was another guy wife was having their first baby. And the difference of the birth was probably 3 weeks. So this guy, Conley, got bumped. This other guy got put in his spot for advanced party so he could be home for the birth of his child. Well, a week after they left, him and the platoon commander, Lieutenant Fitzgerald, who was a Citadel graduate, had radio issues. And we were probably, they were left seat, right seat. And they stopped to fix the radios right on top of a pressure plate. And they didn't realize it, killed them instantly. And it just, you know, and then coming back from that deployment was the struggles, you know, the suicide rate was super high. People were overdosing, drinking themselves, car accidents, things like that. And it was just, you know, that was one of by far the worst deployment. And even when I was going through the VA, the medical board process, I would go to the VA and we'd be talking. They're like, oh, what deployments were you on? I was like, you know, 05 Ramadi. And they're like, and even the VA people's eyes are like, you know, those different locations where people talk about it, you're like, oh, yeah, we heard about that, you know, and it's just like, oh man, you know, and different stories, you know, throughout that deployment are in the book, really kind of setting the stage for anyone who deployed into those like nasty areas that, you know, experienced the civilian casualties or the, you know, the weird different events, you know, the one of the recruiting events that's discussed in the book is, we call it the Glass Factory incident, where they had a recruiting event of maybe 100 and something people all packed into this like old abandoned factory. They were recruiting the Iraqi police to, you know, plus up their security forces or whatever they want to call themselves. And a guy went in there and detonated himself with a suicide vest. And then, of course, you know, some of my friends that I still talk to today were charged with going over there, were handled black trash bags and shovels, like picking up leaves in the backyard, saying, go do what you can. And I mean, so they were experiencing that. And it's just, those are the stories I put in there. You know, some of my family members are like, oh my God, I had no idea. And it's like, I don't want to, you know, no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to be like, oh, guess what we did, you know, last week, we got, you know, all this other stuff. But I wanted to really set the stage and really show, like, during that time, I know for the Army, like Baghdad and all these other different places were really hotbeds for just nonstop, you know, just abuse. And, you know, and then the 07 deployment was, yes, it was the deployment. Yes, you know, we were out doing different missions, but it also started kind of tying in with the, you know, family deaths. You know, my wife's grandfather, who she was really close with, passed away during that deployment. Then, you know, family issues, mom, you know, mom and dad getting a divorce, you know, all those like back home issues that you can't deal with, but it, in your mind, they're like, oh man, this is, and then
you're still there.
Yeah. And then you start compounding the deployment, the personal stuff, the deployment, the personal stuff, the deployment. And pretty soon you're just like, okay, you know what? You just become a robot and you become numb. And it's just one of those, it's such a tragic tale, but it's a tale that so many can relate to. And that's the worst part about it, is it's, and that's what kills me about the PTSD the stigma of, oh, you're broken, you're a problem. You know, back then, not sure when, what years you were in, but you know, the stigma, if you come back from deployment, you're back probably for, I don't know, maybe a year before you're going right back on deployment. And they don't tell you this specifically, but if you're that problem in the company, battalion, platoon level, you're going away. Like, there's no time to deal with that. You know, they have to get ready for the next 7 month deployment. I mean, nothing against the individual, but there's just no time. So, you know, people start burying it. And the end result is, you know, what we've all seen so many times, the Marine drill instructor who was at the pool standing on the diving board in front of the whole recruit depot kills him. You know, I mean, it's just, it's such a, it's such a tragic story that just hopefully the more people like you and I, or whoever else that writes these books, that, hey, it's okay. These are the stories that everyone has dealt with and people have come out better on the other side. You know, don't wait until you're at that spot where you have no, or you feel you have no way of bettering yourself, or, you know, I have no way out of this situation. It's hopeless, you know, like that kind of thing. And it's, and there's just so many resources now. And I can't stress that enough, that I just hope people will, you know, put the ego aside, put the, oh, I can't be not okay. I have to be okay because, you know, this guy's okay. Well, you may not be okay, and he may be a better faker than you because he's probably not okay either. Right. And you know, it's stuff like that. So I think writing this book was just so important to get that out there. And weirdly enough, a guy I hadn't spoken with since the 2007 deployment ended up messaging me saying, hey, I picked up this book because, you know, I wanted, you know, you were sharing some of the same stories that I had in my mind. And I didn't even realize that, you know, you were the guy who wrote it until I was flipping through it. And it's like, wait a second. And you know, and he's been dealing with it since, you know, 2007 also, never got help, never got anything, lost his marriage. His kids don't talk to him anymore just because he isolated, because he just went down that rabbit hole. And now as he's reading the book and unloading his own stuff through the stories that I've shared, he's starting to get better. His relationship with his kids are starting to get better. You know, he's working, progressing in the right direction. And I think that's, if there's any kind of like success story, it's stories like that, that I think, you know, if the book is helping others get, you know, get their life back on track, then, you know, all the hard nights and the, you know, as you're writing it, you're reliving those stories and you're like, you know, you start kind of going down that rabbit hole yourself a little bit. But if for all that frustration and sleepless nights and, you know, rehashing the past, you know, if it's helping someone else, then that's perfect.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. I feel like, you know, we're putting our stories out there with the hopes of having somebody else pick that book up and helping them. And absolutely, you got this information from this one guy. I'm sure it's not just the one person who's picked it up and read it and felt that similar way. Maybe he's the only one who reached out to you directly, but you know, I'm sure there's others as well. I'm looking at the subtitle on your book. So Terror to Triumph. And then it says, sometimes the toughest battles you have to fight are at home with yourself. You know, so we've definitely talked about some of the terrors that you experienced, right? Some of those deaths that you experienced, what happened to that Iraqi family, you know, things like that. All that is terror, really. I think you picked a great word for that title. But I'm curious to hear a little bit about some of the triumphs. You know, that you described that terror part pretty well, but let's talk about the triumph part of it. And you know, what did that look like for you?
For sure. I think the triumph part was definitely, you know, hitting that retirement date in 2015. On one hand, I was like, yes, I'm done with the military. I'm finally out. I can get on with my life. But then you leave and that door closes behind you. And maybe this is how like prisoners feel when they get out of jail, you know, that door slams behind them and it's like, oh, now what? Like, I don't have to worry about, you know, fresh haircut, formation, like all this stuff Monday morning. I'm on my own now. And, you know, the success for me was getting out, going against the doctor saying, hey, you're not going to be successful in the marriage. You're not going to be able to get a, you know, education. You're not going to be able to hold down a job. You're not going to be. And for me, it was, and looking back on it, I wish I could. And I've slowly started to try and go back and speak to the different Wounded Warrior Battalions and the Army Wounded Warrior Battalions here in San Antonio, because I want to really reiterate to them, don't listen to the you can't, because there's so many people who will say, yeah, you can't do this. You're broken. You're in a wheelchair. You're missing an arm. You've got burns. You've got, you know, any of that stuff. And I really wanted them to start saying, you know what? Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you maybe can't, you know, go snowboarding anymore because you've got a bunch of TBIs and you could like hit your head wrong and lights go out. But you know what you can do? You can be a motivational speaker. You can be, you know, get a PhD. You can get all these things that are positive. You know, you can do anything you want. I mean, you may have limitations now where you can't play hockey anymore. Well, who cares? But you can still, you know, go run a golf pro shop, you know, take other wounded vets out there and play golf with them in Florida, you know, go watch the Masters where they hit this little stupid white ball and make millions of dollars. You know, I mean, what could be better than that, you know? And, you know, things like that. So, and I think, you know, hitting our 20-year wedding anniversary, getting my degree. I'm now working as a case manager for the county's Veterans Treatment Court, which basically we take veterans who either have an honorable discharge or a general discharge, who have gotten arrested for, you know, DWIs, assaults. There are certain cases we can't, you know, if they're too like out there and they're not, there's no real linkage, like beating up an old person has nothing to do with your military time, but drinking or family violence is almost like a checklist for, oh, you deployed, you got family violence. Yep. Imagine that. It's kind of a roadmap, but we take them before they have to plead guilty in front of the judge. We get them registered for the VA. We put them through a one-year program where they're required to seek treatment. They're required to stay sober during the whole year. There's a lot of factors that they have to meet. But at the end of the year, their cases are dismissed. And then they can apply to have their case expunged. So they get a fresh start. So that we kind of show them like, hey, look, you screwed up, but you can come back from this. You can be productive. You can be, get your life back on track if you're willing to do the work. And that what is frustrating as the job is sometimes, because I've never really been behind the desk kind of person, but as that job is definitely fulfilling. So that to me is triumphing from, you know, hitting rock bottom, hitting the, man, I can't do this anymore. I can't be the, you know, the door kicker anymore. I can't, you know, carry a gun in the Wild West anymore kind of thing. And it's just like, for a long time, that was such a struggle. Cause I was like, oh, you know, I'm still young enough. I want to kick in the doors. I want to be that point guy. But then it kind of clicked. I'm like, you know what though, 44 years old, it's time to let that younger generation, you know, be those door kickers and maybe use my experience to share the successes and the good, the bad, and the ugly with them, so they don't have to repeat the good, the bad, and the ugly. They can just, you know, either A, come back whole without any injuries, have a better family life, have a better relationship with their kids, you know, and those are kind of like the triumphs, like where I've hit rock bottom and now like climbing out of the climbing out of that, like that basement, I guess, in your mind, where you're just like, oh, I can't do anything anymore. I'm, you know, I'm kicked out of the military. I'm broken. But then it all clicks and you're like, you know what? There's so much more out there that you don't see once you take the blinders off or once you just stop dwelling in that that self-pity, I guess, if you will, where that's like, oh, poor me, I've, you know, I deployed and now my back hurts, so I can't do anything anymore. And you get out of that mindset. Like a really good guy I met as I was transitioning out, trying to, you know, try my hand at different things, Rico Roman. He's actually the one of the captains of the sled hockey or the sledge hockey team that just won the gold, the Paralympic Games. And he's a really great guy. And he said it best. He's like, you know what? We're here when you're done. Yeah. You lost a leg, you lost an arm, you whatever. Yeah. That sucks. But we're right here when you're done dwelling on that, you know, come out and let's play hockey. You know, it's not standing up and skating around like the, you know, the Flyers or anything like that. It's on that sled, but I mean, watching that stuff on the Paralympic Games, I'm like, dang, you guys are just as brutal as they are standing up. You guys are just, so there's so many like things out there that people can still do as long as they let themselves go there. You know what I mean? Like, as long as they yep. will let themselves be vulnerable, let themselves take advantage of it. And you know, anyone who is at the bottom can definitely fight their way back to the top for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. If you know, kind of piggybacking off of what you're saying there, if you are just focusing on the handful of things that you can't do, think about the millions of things that you can do that are out there, all these possibilities, all these different opportunities that are out there. And think about all those things that you can do. And
absolutely,
suddenly the handful of things that you maybe can't do, maybe that you do have a limitation where if you had a TBI, for example, yeah, you probably don't want to be playing a high impact sport. That's probably just not gonna help things out any, right? But think about all the other things that you can do. And now you have this time freed up where you might have otherwise been spending it doing that other activity. You now have that time to explore all these other opportunities. Maybe the first 2, 3, 4 things that you try aren't gonna be great for you. Maybe it's not gonna really turn you on and get you excited about it. But you know, if you keep trying all these possibilities, all these different things that are out there, I mean, you're eventually going to find something that you do enjoy, and you may find that you even enjoy it more than whatever that other thing was that you aren't doing anymore. Right. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So that just opens up, a whole world of possibilities. And really, I think what it is just the mindset shift. You can
absolutely.
You can dwell on the woe is me, I can't do this anymore, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, focus on what you can do. I say to people all the time, focus on what you can control, because the stuff that's out of your control is out of your control. And if you're wasting your time worrying about that stuff, I mean, you're literally wasting your time. There's nothing that you can do to change some of the stuff that's just out of your control. So focus on the stuff that you can control. I think you'll end up being a whole lot happier for it, right?
Absolutely, for sure. Completely agree with you. You know, and like you said too, you know, you're so like trained to be this like Rambo, you know, like carrying the gun and being like this special forces guy. And it's like, that's your whole life. Well, now you've got this time. Now you're like this, maybe a sled hockey guy, or now a writer, or a motor. I mean, so many things. You're like you said, oh man, I've always wanted to try that. Wow. This is way cooler than breaking my back every day. You know, it's like, it's that revelation. You're like, oh, you know, or, yeah, I mean, just anything. It's amazing how something, we were speaking about maybe earlier, if we could, put this guy's name out there. Just weirdly coincidence that he's going through some stuff, and my wife's company is working with him, and we've met and we've, talked about it. We're going to go play at a golf tournament together. Tomorrow up in Austin, Texas. But he is a singer-songwriter. His name is Shannon Book, B-O-O-K. He's all over iTunes. If you Google, he pops up everywhere. His band Vetted played at the Invictus Games in Orlando. He was on the big stage for all the things, which had to be so awesome. But all his music that he does, every time you download it, so if you're into rock music or just supporting a guy who is a Navy corpsman in the initial push in Fallujah, every time someone downloads his music, all that money that's made goes right to different organizations to help suicide prevention, wounded warriors, things like that. So definitely please go out there, take a look, listen. A lot of his music is really great. I will tell you, some of his music is written from a first person perspective about the struggles that everyone goes through, whether you be military, police, first responder. But his music will definitely hit you right in the, right in the heart. The emotional heartstrings will get pulled by listening to his music. But a lot of it is really great. It's he's a rock music player. He's out of Austin, Texas. His newest band, though, is called Deliberately Broken, and they are actually making, they're playing up in up near Killeen, up at the Army base and stuff like that. And he travels around and plays for all these different organizations that support the military. So definitely go out there and give his music a listen and check it out. And I think you'll really enjoy it. And I think it's great for him. It's a great outlet, you know, really, like we were talking about, you know, he was a corpsman, got out of the military, was kind of like, oh, you know, don't know what I'm going to do. And now he's this, he doesn't think he's huge, but I think he's, you know, accomplished so much. And he's used his military and his traumas to put this band together and perform in front of all these people and raise lots of awareness for, you know, suicide awareness and things like that. So great guy, great music. Definitely go give it a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the different approaches that people take to expressing themselves. You know, you've written a book, I've written a book. Some people take to art, some people take to, you know, different forms of expressing themselves. But music is another one of those forms that that people will use to express themselves and tell their story and get some information out there, but also using it to help people along the way too, right? All the money is going towards these different organizations that are helping out veterans. So you know, I think it's really an amazing thing that he's doing there. So you know, and I'll try to put some links to the music in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Awesome. That'd be great.
So that way we can help promote some of that stuff as well. Before I let you go today, Chris, I wanted to just let you take a couple of minutes to just say, you know, what you hope the readers will get out of your book, and then also tell us again where we can get a copy of the book, so that way the listeners know where to get it.
Absolutely. As far as what to get out of the book, I really hope anyone who picks it up that has either maybe, I guess, first and foremost, have never been in the military, you know, really open your eyes about, you know, what the, you know, people will see it on the news or see it, you know, hear through the stories, but maybe they don't really have a full appreciation because they're just not in that life. They just don't know the huge sacrifice that not only the servicemen and women deal with, but I also want to put out there the family, the spouses who are out there that are caregivers are definitely the unsung heroes that are out there that, you know, behind closed doors, you see them all out there smiling and happy and, you know, but that may be 30 minutes of an entire week that's been absolutely miserable. So anyone who's out there that is just taking care of the wounded, ill, or injured are definitely just phenomenal, you know, unsung heroes for sure. And I hope the people who are in the military that maybe, you know, the spouses or the family members who, you know, pick up the book that are like, man, why is my son, brother, uncle, just whoever, best friend, why is he coming back so distant? Why won't he talk about stuff? Why is he getting up at 3 a.m. going to, you know, check the doors and the lights and the windows and just all this stuff? Like, what is going on with him? He's so different. Well, yeah, he's different, but there's a reason. And maybe that's going to be an eye opener. And for the guys and men and women who have deployed and coming back, you know what? It's okay to not be okay. Like, get out of that mindset where you have to be this invincible person, where you put on, and something I put in the book that's probably going to hit home with a lot of people is take off the Halloween mask, let people really see who you are and what you're dealing with. Because it's so easy. And I was an expert at it, you know, behind the closed doors, I would just isolate, a wreck, drink all the time, but out in public, put on that little Halloween mask and be like, oh, I'm great. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm invincible. Well, that's ridiculous. And we all know that's ridiculous. So get out of that mindset. There's tons of resources out there. You know, just take advantage. Don't be a statistic. There's too many resources. There's too many people who care about all of us, you know, family, friends, wives, girlfriend, whatever. You know, don't be that person. There's help out there. Definitely get the help. If you Google it, Google the book title, Terror to Triumph, it will pop up on about 5 or 6 Google pages of results of different locations. It's overseas in Great Britain, Germany. It was in the military magazines, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And then if you go on Reader House, Kindle, the audiobook will be out soon. If you go on Reader House, readerhouse.com, and type and find the book and punch in the code FFSAVE, S-A-V-E, 1010, it will give you a 10% off discount code for purchasing the book. Please, if you're able, go out there and support the book, pass it on to as many people as you, think will benefit from it or are just into those stories in general. I think it will be, it'd be a great thing. So, I'd love to hear any feedback too. So if anyone does purchase the book, everyone's great about clicking the stars on Amazon, but please leave a review, like some comments on there, so I can, hear, hey, this was good or this was not good. And, I welcome all that. If you don't like it, please tell me why you didn't like it. I think it would be, great. A lot of people are asking, oh, when are you going to write the next book? But yeah, no. So, it'll be a long time before there's another book, but, it's one of those just things. It's just, a great, it's just been great. So thank you again so much for having me on here, and definitely appreciate, it's just been a great time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm really glad that you came on to share your story and, talk a little bit about your book. I'm sure we could have gone real deep on some of the stuff and dove into the topics, but I really want people to go out and buy the book. So I don't want to give too much away in this episode. So, go out and buy the book. We'll have links to everything in the show notes to where you can buy the book and everything else that we talked about as well. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.